Sigrun Spellman, you are living and working in Washington, D.C. About a year, maybe two, after graduating college. You've been working for the D.C. Public Library System for a while now. You started in your last year or two of college, mostly part-time, kind of interning a little bit, getting some work experience to help pad out your resume so that when you graduated, you stood a better chance of finding a job. You got lucky and you worked really, really hard during those part-time hours. You proved yourself enough that the branch manager for the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Library in Washington, D.C., agreed to take you on in a full-time librarian position that opened up around the time that you were graduating. It is a multi-story building of black steel and glass sitting on a corner in D.C. It's creates a little bit of a strange dichotomy in a city where so many other buildings are old. They're tall, massive structures with almost Roman style pillars, and certainly a feeling that they fit better in places like London than they do in modern America. Especially when you get closer to the hill. But you love it. It's become a refuge. A place that you can go where the smell of books surrounds you all the time. And you are you suspect even if you lived and worked here your entire life, you'd never be able to read all the books in this library. It's floor upon floor upon floor of knowledge and dreams and fantasy. There's spaces for community projects like reading to children. There are conference rooms that can be rented out and frequently are reserved by local activist groups as a place to meet. You can stand at the top of the central staircase and look down, and it almost seems like this kind of wonky Alice in Wonderland feeling endless spiral staircase. Some time ago, your friend Cecilia came to you and expressed being interested in taking on a kind of assistant manager position. It's not quite the branch manager spot, but it is higher up. It comes with a decent pay bump and slightly better hours, not to mention you're closer to the general manager, and it's the kind of position that frequently gets entrusted with things like helping to make schedules and to keep people on and to kind of determine like who is best suited for what sort of program when it comes to scheduling people for things outside of helping people find books and managing like check-ins and check-outs. you have worked with Cecilia for a while, and for weeks, even months, the two of you kind of put your heads together and looked for ways to make her look really good. She would jump at the chance to be a part of these, be a part of taking on community outreach programs, you know, working with groups from schools that come in and looking for ways to help donate old books to community groups that might need them when the library is in the process of replacing them. The two of you have put in a lot of hours. You've come in at all weird times. You've probably hit overtime multiple times and not necessarily gone looking for the overtime pay because, you know, you wanted her to look as good as possible. So you would just come in and do a little bit of work off clock. It's not like you had much else to do. When you're not at home trolling library or trolling forums and reading books, you're here. She has talked at length about how if she gets the position, it could enable her to live with maybe a couple less roommates than she currently has. And, you know, she's in a house with like four other people right now and it's really crowded and she's pretty over it. You're in a very similar position. It's DC's an expensive city to live in for anybody. But especially jobs that rarely make more than the, you know, the average for the country. So the two of you have talked about when she gets it, finding a place that you could rent with maybe one other person, maybe a little bit closer to work, a little bit bigger, generally just kind of better all around. And you're excited for her. You have been the whole time, despite how exhausting all of this is. And then you come into work one day, sleep deprived, on probably your third cup of coffee for the morning. And there is a mingled feeling of frustration and excitement in the library. You can see Cecilia is sitting at the front desk, which is this large kind of round. It almost looks a little bit like a bunch of podiums have been built side by side and then connected. It's like this large circular space in the middle of the main floor, with a little door to keep people out from where the librarians actually sit behind it. And she's sitting there and she has this look on her face where she is doing her best not to look crestfallen and angry. And you can hear a commotion coming from further back into the library where the offices, where, you know, the offices and the break room usually are. And as you're standing there kind of watching her and listening to what sounds at least a little bit celebratory and excited coming from nearby, you hear the clop of horses' hooves outside. You've just walked in the front door and you kind of turn your head to look over your shoulder and you swear you see a horse with a dude in full plate armor on its back charging between the lines of cars sitting in traffic right now. But when you turn all the way to look, there's nothing there, and nobody passing by on the sidewalk or inside near the windows seems to have seen anything.
Cecilia, are they promoting like a new Renaissance fair outside? I could have sworn I saw a knight? A horse? Did you see that?
No. Have you had enough sleep?
What would be the best way to answer that? No. But I know, you know what? It's not Renaissance season. I don't know. Maybe I was just tired. Are you okay?
Oh, yeah, no, I'm fine. It's just been a long morning and I just got here, so.
I know I'm sleep deprived, but I know when you are holding something back, what happened?
At that, she sort of chews on her lower lip, a lip, which is kind of a nervous habit you have seen her show in the past. And she glances around and then back over her shoulder towards where, you know, the offices are and the sound of excitement and whatnot is coming from. And she steps out from behind the desk, which she's sure that there's nobody else here. Who's going to come up immediately and need her. And she walks over and she drops her voice and goes, I didn't get it.
What? Wait, what? But how? How? You were a shoo-in.
Gave it to Thomas.
I'm sorry. Maybe I just need a fourth cup of coffee. I believe I heard you say Thomas, and that does not sound correct.
I had the same thought, but you know how it is in the city. He's related to one of the board members or something. I don't know.
God damn it. Freaking Thomas. Okay, maybe there's something else coming up. Maybe someone's going to retire soon. You're a shoo-in for the next one. Absolute shoo-in.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. I don't know when the next one will be, or if it'll be here. It might be at one of the other branches.
Cecilia, I'm sorry. I just don't know what to say.
It's not your fault. We did everything we could. Thank you for all of the help. I owe you like a million pizzas.
Think nothing of it. Let's have lunch together and go to a nice place, not just one of the cheap go there for 10 minutes places. Have a sit down.
So not the hot dog cart that's always outside?
No, you deserve something nicer than the hot dogs, even though they're good. We'll go somewhere nice.
All right, fine. Yeah, no, that sounds good. We have to walk by the hot dog cart, though. That guy's so cute.
Whatever makes you happy.
All right. And I'm buying, because I owe you for all the help.
Grumble, grumble. Fine, fine, fine.
All right, well, I'm going to get back to the desk before somebody comes up and starts ringing the bell. We all know how Madeline feels about when they ring the bell because nobody's there.
And I'm going to go to Thomas's desk and turn everything upside down. Not in like a throw everything around, but if papers flip upside down, the keyboard upside down.
You could congratulate him.
Absolutely not. How could you offend me that way?
Just don't get yourself into trouble.
Me in trouble? No, never. Nope. I'll be fine.
She gives you a I don't believe you look, but shrugs a little bit because she knows you're going to do what you're going to do. And then she heads back to the desk.
I am going to find Thomas's desk, and I'm just going to just do small chaos.
Excellent. You head back into these offices. You pass by a break room where you can hear Thomas, talking to a bunch of other people. He's speaking pretty boisterously. He's clearly excited, but he's also very obviously bragging, as he is wont to do. And you just grit your teeth and walk by, because that would probably get you in trouble, going in and mouthing off. But his new office is just down the hallway. And it looks like he came in and has already set up a lot of his stuff, because it's not just like the basics on his desk now. It's, you know, he's got picture frames and you know, a cup with all of his pencils and pens in it. He's got a little nameplate that you're pretty sure he made for himself, or was gifted to him by whatever uncle or grandfather, whoever it is that he's related to on the board. Not everything is fully unpacked, but there's a lot that's already been unpacked and set up.
Okay, perfect. She's first going to go over to the computer. If it's not turned on, if it's turned on, she's going to just keyboard slam until it's completely like locked out and he has to like call someone to unlock his computer. If it is turned off, she's not going to worry with it.
It is on. You are able to incorrectly put in passwords like 10 yes. times and it locks you out.
Yes, wonderful. Then she's going to go to the picture frames and flip them upside down. She's going to take the pens and put them in someone else's office. She's going to move papers in the incorrect order.
I love that. And flip them upside down, I assume.
And flip them upside down, because of course.
Perfect. Perfect, perfect, perfect. You turn Thomas's room into a place that looks normal at first glance, until he sits down and really looks at it, and then he'll realize that everything is upside down, or like 3 inches to the left from where it should be, or it's completely gone. And that he can't get into his computer. It's going to be a long morning for Thomas on the phone with IT. And you've worked. You've had to deal with the folks at IT for the system. They are overworked, underpaid, and kind of grumpy on the best days. So the fact that he is going to be calling them with something as dumb as being locked out of his own computer is going to eat up a good chunk of his first morning.
Out of just feeling bad for the IT department, she is going to go to the office of the person who's probably going to be speaking with Thomas and just leave like a gift card for fast food just under the desk, under the door. Like, don't think about it, but I'm sorry in advance.
Yeah. So for the previous Christmas, you got a $10 Starbucks gift card, and it's just been in your purse this whole time. You've never used it because you prefer one of the local places that just always tastes better. It is a little bit more homey, not to mention way cheaper. And you pull out the gift card, you slide it under the IT department's office door. They're not in yet, but they will be soon. So that'll be a nice surprise.
Yep. And then she'll just go to her desk and start her work.
Excellent. You make your way into a space that is a little less private office-y and a little bit more like a dugout. Like, you're not in cubicles, but it's basically all of the lower tier staff at the library are all in this, all have spots in this extra office. Everybody has their own desk, but you all share like a large space. Make your way over, and it's empty for the moment. Most people are either out on the floor dealing with returns, or they haven't come in yet, that sort of thing. And you sit down and you're kind of unloading stuff that you took home for the night or whatever. And you hear what you are sure is like a whole conversation happening behind you in a language that you can't quite understand.
I think she's going to look around for it, but it's the thought of, oh, well, I live in DC. People speak in like their native language all the time, and I'm not going to bother them about it. So not going to be too invested, but But if it sounds very odd, she is going to at least try to look around for it.
It's the thing that makes it odd isn't the fact that it's a language you don't understand. That's pretty common here. What's odd is that you walked in and you are sure that there was nobody in this room when you walked in and that you haven't seen anybody come through the door.
Oh, yeah, she's definitely going to at least look around for it.
You turn and at first you see nothing, and then you're sure that you see a pair of little statuettes on the desk of Meredith, who's one of the older women who's been working here for forever and has never really gotten a promotion but doesn't seem bothered by it. She has these two little statuettes that are it's like a man and a woman, and they're facing each other and they've got like hands outstretched towards each other, and they've been on her desk since you got here. The only time you've ever seen her even so much as move them is to, like, you know, wipe dust off of them, and then she always puts them back. And you're absolutely sure that they were leaning in towards each other like they were whispering, but when you blink and look again, they're standing there normal.
I think if anyone walks in at this moment, they would see Sigrun kind of just leaned over and just staring slightly intensely at them to see if maybe they have a button or like a recording box or something that would result in her hearing voices.
Make me a perception and... Just make me a perception check. In order to use the bot that we use, you're going to type slash dice roll. Put in your however many dice you get. The difficulty is 6. You could use the bot channel, by the way.
Okay.
Oof. Okay. Yeah, you look and there doesn't seem to be anything unusual about them. But perhaps what is more startling than the fact that they just look like a little pair of statuettes is the voice that comes from behind you. Morning.
Sorry. Morning. Morning.
You turn around and... it is Jacob, who is one of the like temporary like intern guys. He's doing a lot like what you did when you were going to college. Are you okay?
Apparently, it's a lack of coffee and sleep. Sorry.
Or maybe too much coffee. How? What cup is that?
It is more than one, and that's all I'll admit to.
Not enough sleep, too much caffeine?
Maybe I should switch to tea. I have been considering tea.
Probably a good idea, though. Make sure that it doesn't have as much caffeine in it, or any, really, if you're going to have coffee first thing in the morning.
Okay, yeah. Sorry.
No, it's okay. You all right, though?
Yeah, just... It's a weird day. It's so weird. Did you hear that Thomas got promoted?
Yeah, ugh. I did. He's done nothing but brag for the past hour.
Absolutely gross. I think that's just throwing me off my vibe. I came in here, sensed that everything was off, found out about that, and everything is still off.
Well, I hope it gets better. Maybe he'll take a long lunch like he tends to, and things will be normal for a few hours.
We can only... hope. If I don't have to see his face, I will consider that a good day.
Yeah, same. He goes over to his desk, grabs a file. You know that he's been part of working on a recent a recent project. Your understanding is that there has been a partnership with the London Library, and between the London Library and the Library of Congress, where they are like exchanging books. It's kind of one of those silly, lame international gift exchanges that countries do every so often to show that they're still friends, but what's being traded kind of makes no sense or isn't all that important. Yeah. Happens a lot here, but everybody is a little bit excited about this one because even though to most of the populace this isn't a big deal, this sort of thing wouldn't be a big deal. It's a big deal for the library systems throughout the country, because what is happening is that they're exchanging a large number of books, and then those books, at least here in the US, are being distributed to library systems who need help or are just struggling a little bit. And DC, while semi well funded, is not one of the best funded places in the country, being that it's a city project. So you guys know that you were getting a pretty hefty order, and he has been helping to kind of not necessarily add stuff to the system, but kind of go through the list that they think they're going to be getting to try to figure out what books are being taken off of the shelves, because there's only so much space. And that's pretty common in libraries. New books come in, old books get like donated or sold or whatever. And that has been like his big tedious chore lately as he's working on that. You continue on through your day. You have a lovely, lovely lunch with Cecilia. You end up going to a really nice, funny enough, pizza place, but it's like a sit down, nice restaurant. An odd thing happens during lunch where you are sitting there having a conversation and they've got music playing over the speakers. And you are sure that the song that you have heard a million times, that there is something wrong with the track that is being played, because you're sure that you are hearing chanting woven in with the music in a way that you've never heard before. But when you ask Celia about it, she doesn't know what you're talking about. And when you try to listen for it again, it's not there. And eventually your day wraps up. And that's kind of how most of the next week goes. There's occasionally something that you see that when you look twice, it's gone, or you hear, but you can't place the source of. Things seem to move, but when you look at them again, they're right where they always were. And you're starting to get pretty certain that you need to be like, you need to sleep more. Drink way less coffee. And then the day comes that the book exchange has happened, and you are scheduled for one of those late shifts that you signed up for to try and help Cecilia get her position. You are pretty much the only one in the library really that's a part of the staff that you work on. Like, there's janitors and things like that, so you're not alone in the entire building. But the janitors have already passed through the floor that you're on. They've moved on to other floors. It's a guy who's here pretty frequently. He's got headphones on. He's not paying any attention to you or anything else. And you are settled in behind that large circular desk just in case somebody comes in, and you are sorting through boxes upon boxes of books that have been given to the library system, right, and to this library in particular through the book exchange program. You are scanning things, adding them into the computer system, making sure that you print out information sheets to add to files and things like that. And it's a lot of very tedious work, but you're alone, which is kind of nice. You've got music going because there's really nobody else here. The doors are closed to the public right now. The library is not open for business. And you're pulling book after book after book out of these big out of these boxes, and you get to you pull out one that looks like a small kind of dog-eared. These are obviously, most of them are either used or very lightly used. There's a handful that are new, but not many. You pull out what looks like a dog-eared, like, mystery paperback. But it's weird because it feels heavier than it should be, rather than the, you know, few ounces that most paperbacks weigh, especially thin little, you know, kind of trashy ones. This one feels like it weighs like several pounds. And it takes effort to lift it out of the box. And what's stranger is that the cover, that kind of wax covered paper that paperbacks tend to be or tend to have, it feels leathery under your fingers.
This is odd.
And somehow it feels familiar in a way that none of these books have so far.
I think she's gonna try to, like, after she takes it out, I guess thumb through it, try to see if there is a title.
You go to thumb through it, and as you open it up past the cover, or try to open it up past the cover, you notice that the cover begins to flake away. And it happens really rapidly. It begins to, like, crumble in your hands like dust, just the cover. And around you, you hear whispers, just a couple here and there, the and then it gets more and more, like, there's a ton of people around you talking. You can hear things moving around you. The lights above you start to go kind of dim and dark, and that should freak you out, but somehow you realize as that happens that your eyes were, like, aching from the light, just normal lights around you. And when they dim, it feels better. And you can see just as well, if not better. And you kind of watch, fixated on this book in your hands, in kind of mingled horror and fascination, as this thing that you've dedicated your life to, books, it literally begins, it's almost like it falls apart while you're touching it. But you can't let go. And it flakes and crumbles away like dust. And then you blink and you realize that what you're holding isn't a paperback. It is a heavy, large, ancient-looking book that is bound in brown leather with black straps and silver buckles to hold it closed.
Did I mess this book up? Oh, I hope no one saw that. Oh, no.
The front of the book, between the two straps that hold it closed, you see two twin crescent moons that are facing to the right, and a silver triangle with a black star in it. It's nothing you've ever seen before, but it is worked in to the leather, embossed in it. It looks beautiful in a haunting kind of way. You're sure that you've seen this before somewhere. Or maybe you were just meant to see it. It feels like it was supposed to be in your hands.
I think there is a moment where, with the cacophony of sound and the dimming of the lights and the flaking away, I think Sigrun, her only thought was, oh no, a book is breaking apart and I'm the cause of it. And that was her primary focus. But now with this new reveal that's happened, she's going through several thoughts of, I want to take this book, but I also don't want to touch this book because what if I break it again?
Do you open it?
I think after a pause or two, I think she's just going to take like the index and her thumb and just do like the very delicate like peel back to open it.
Okay. So you reach up and you undo the buckles that hold the straps closed. And you begin to very, very carefully move that front cover to the left to open it. And before you can even read the words on the pages inside, you are sure that you know what is on at least some of them. And then the weirdest thing happens. As the sense of familiarity and knowledge begins to fill you, you look down and the ink on the pages shifts and moves and morphs and forms a picture of a little lizard-like creature that crawls across the page to the edge. And you watch that as instead of stopping at the edge of the paper, which is where a drawing like this would have to stop, little claws reach up out of the edge of the paper and they grab onto the top of the book. And this creature peels itself up and off of the page and jumps onto the floor. And as it begins to skitter away from you and out of your little desk area, it begins to grow. And it grows rapidly. And you can't stop yourself from watching as you realize this little lizard-like creature is becoming a full-on fucking dragon from the front of like a fantasy novel come to life in front of you. It is not flat anymore. It is fully three-dimensional. It is here and it is right in front of you. You could feel heat coming off of its scales, which are this glistening red and black. And you realize, because you are forced to kind of lean back a little bit to watch it, that around you, all throughout the library, other weird things are happening. You watch as other books that are like put on display, like brightly colored children's books that are on display, creatures and people are peeling themselves and climbing out of the covers of those. You realize that on the walls, the paintings that have been put up, the paintings are moving on their canvases. In the frames for the ones that are currently framed, carvings that are set up as just like decor to keep things fun and interesting in a place full of nothing but shelves and shelves of books, begin to move and jump off of their stands and down off of the top of the half height bookshelves that they're on. This place has come to life, and you feel like it is the whole world is somehow brighter and more intense and somehow just more, despite the fact that none of this is possible. And you are in the middle of it, and it is loud. It is so loud that even the tiniest sounds, the tiniest movements of like your own inhale almost sounds a little bit like a siren going off next to your suddenly hypersensitive ears.
I think, oh. Sigrun is watching all this happen and she doesn't know I think she's just kind of frozen in that spot because there's the instinct of this is weird. I'm registering that it's weird. I should not be in this weird, and I should go home. I think I should just go home. But she just can't look away from it. So it's the fight or flight type of mentality, or like the flight or freeze mentality right now.
Okay. You have this moment where you're like, I should get up. I should get up. I should go. I need to get away from this. This isn't normal. I'm going to go home. I'm going to sleep. I'll wake up and it'll all be fine in the morning. Because there is that part of your brain that is like, none of this could be real. And then there is the part of your brain that has been steeped in literature and you know, everything from modern mystery to isekai-ish stories where you get sucked into fantasy worlds where you're like, oh my God, it's all finally coming true. It's happening to me. There is a... your eyes, which have been taking in all of the things happening around you, turn back to that dragon, which has become very large, and you are sure should be knocking everything over around it. Like, you watch as it barely moves in a way that doesn't knock over like a whole shelf of books. And it has crawled its way around that kind of circular desk area that you're in to be behind you, and you watch as its mouth opens and you can see a spark of like light at the back of its throat, and then it roars at you. And where you might have just been going, I should just go home and go to sleep, you are suddenly filled with like abject fucking terror.
She is like trying to scramble and like get the hell out of it. She's like, nope. I know what's gonna happen now. I need to go.
You leap over this desk. Well, maybe not leap. You're not super graceful. You weren't exactly ready for this. But you like scramble over the desk. You don't bother with the door. You're just up out of your seat and vaulting yourself over this desk. And sprinting down this like half staircase towards the front double glass doors, and you burst out onto the street, and you're sure that just being out here in the fresh air will make everything better, but things don't get better. Somehow here on the street in the dark, you know there's like street lamps or whatever, but it's nighttime. Somehow the world seems more alive, more grand, and more impossible. And you find yourself surrounded by a bunch of weird stuff. Like, you look up and you realize that that hot dog cart that usually just gets pushed to be nearby is there now. It's never there at this hour. But it's there now, and the guy standing there is he's kind of familiar. He looks like the guy that you've bought hot dogs from a million times, except that his ears are pointed. And his face is a little bit more angular than last time you saw him. There is something about him that just seems somehow more than the man that you knew. You look across the street, and in a little alleyway between two of the buildings, there is a dumpster. And you hear this like rustling and shuffling and crashing noises coming from inside the dumpster, and then the top of it flies open, and out of it jumps a raccoon, which scurries across the sidewalk and out into the street, and you watch as it goes from a raccoon to a whole ass dude in like ragged clothes with black and white striped hair. You see a woman with kind of brown skin that is dotted with freckles, but the freckles are in shades of green and gray. And she's got these beautiful braids with like beads woven into them. And she looks She is short, and looks almost matronly. And you can feel this sense of like energy and power and raw creativity that is kind of pulsing through the world around you. And you realize after a moment, as you're watching these people who are all very intently watching you, and you can see more and more people coming in from various directions, you realize that you think that all of that energy and raw creative power might be coming from you. It feels like it is. And it feels like they're being drawn to it. And you open your mouth to say something to one of them. And then you don't see any of the things that you saw before. Your vision goes blinding white for a minute. And then you begin to see flashes of images. You see a medieval castle, which flickers, and then you see the Smithsonian castle with its red brick for just a split second, and then it's a medieval castle before. You kind of look up and you see a massive giant that's gotta be like 10, you know, not 10 stories, closer to like 7 or 8 stories tall. And it is closing in on this tall, imposing medieval castle. You can feel one of your hands wrapped around something. You're not entirely sure if it is a spear, if it is or anything like that. But you feel it wrapped around something that you know instinctively is a weapon. And you like pull back on it, and then your vision flickers and flashes again. You see a shining sword sailing through the air, and then it flickers and flashes again. You see a pool of blood on a floor, and then it flickers and flashes again, and then you are back on the street surrounded by all of these people. And there are more than there were before. There is a tall man with blue skin and almost with blue skin and a large, like, looks like a two-handed sword strapped to his back. You see a slender woman who couldn't be more than 5'8", 5'9", with very delicately boned features and upswept ears and dark hair. Who's standing there, and they're all around you, and you can hear the dragon roaring inside of the library behind you.
I think Thigrin, I think just out of familiarity, she's going to look towards the guy from the hot dog stand and just say, what's happening? There's a dragon. What's happening?
Your eyes are opening for the first time.
I'm sorry, what?
Welcome to the world as it really is. Sigrun, right?
Yeah, you...
Ketchup, mustard, no onion?
Yeah. You're the... Huh? What? What?
The tall kind of blue-skinned guy kind of grunts a little bit and looks over at the hot dog guy. You should get her out of here. They're going to come soon. No one's going to be able to hide this. And he sort of gestures around, and you can see now as you focus a little bit better that there is a pulse of color that just seems to kind of go through the air, starting where you are, and it flickers outwards. And for a second, you look up and you're sure that you see a giant towering over a building in the distance, and then you blink and it's gone. And the hot dog guy sort of nods. Yeah, we should get her out of here.
Who's coming? What? I'm switching the tea.
We'll explain later. But we really should go. Come on. Don't worry about the library. It'll be fine. The folks will come by and deal with it. He kind of falls in beside you and he hooks his arm with he puts one arm kind of behind your back to kind of like nudge you forward. And starts walking you down the sidewalk pretty quickly. Hi. We've met before. I'm John.
Hi, John. Cecilia thinks you're cute. Wait, what? Huh?
Hi. That's good to know. She's pretty cute herself.
Good.
So, welcome to the Duchy of Dogwood.
The what of what?
It's... Okay. The Duchy of Dogwood is, where you are. So, okay, I'm not great at this, and that's, you know, probably for the best that I'm not going to be doing any fostering for you, but I will get you to people who will help you find the right kind of person to foster you. Very long story short, we're changelings. I'm a clerican. I mean, your voice isn't quite weird yet, but I'm sure it'll happen eventually.
What do you mean, my voice?
It's a long story, but you know how you are like squinting every time we pass under a light?
Yeah.
Yeah, that usually has something to do with assuming that I'm right, your kith. You'll be seems like you might be a slua. They don't like bright lights. They tend to like quiet things. Really, really dig books and secrets and stuff like that.
Okay, you said changeling, like fairy, fae, changeling?
Yeah, pretty much.
So, okay, how are you so calm about that's a dumb question. You're literally explaining this to me.
Well, I've been doing this for a while. You're going through what's called the dream dance. Also part of Chrysalis. To make a very long story short, it is the moment that you realize what you are and you start to wake up to the world around you. And you put off a lot of what we call glamour, and your connection to the dreaming is really strong. You kind of pull the dreaming to you when it happens, which is why there's a dragon in the library. But don't worry, it'll be fine.
Ow. Why does it hurt?
Because it's loud and bright and you don't, and your type doesn't take that. I'll try to be quieter. My type is usually pretty loud, so.
My voice hurts.
Yeah, that's, like I said, that's going to be part of it. You guys dig everything being quiet. You're not capable of being loud.
Well, I guess that explains my childhood a little bit more. Didn't really talk much.
I hope it's not too bad.
I think it is. Am I able to go back to work?
Maybe. It might not be easy. Might be a good time for us to start. Wow, for whoever's fostering you to help you find a place that's a little more friendly, or at least hours that are a little bit more friendly to your particular preferences.
You keep saying fostering. I'm an adult. I have parents. Are they my parents? Are they still my parents? Are they still my parents?
Yes, they're still your parents. That's not how this works. to make a very long story short, we used to be able to have our own bodies and we kind of can't now. And so we found a way to marry our souls to mortal souls. So we get reborn. Your parents are still your parents. Your mom still gave birth to you. None of that changes. Nobody stole you and placed something new in your cradle or anything like that.
Okay.
You're still you, just more.
Okay.
Fostering, it happens to all of us when we go through our chrysalis. Somebody steps up to foster us, and in your case, because you're already an adult, it's a little bit more like a mentorship than a proper, like, take you in like a kid and raise you fostering. But it's their job, whoever is fostering you, it's their job to, like, introduce you to the world and what we are and teach you how to survive. And the whole reason why we're moving right now, and why that big blue guy was so concerned, is because there are people who don't like us and hunt us. So, you know, fostering helps teach you the rules on how to exist in our world, but also helps keep you safe until you can keep yourself safe.
Okay, this is looking to be a very, very, very silly question.
Yeah.
So, I'm assuming this is not actually a dream and this is happening in real life, like right now. I can accept that. I kind of...
Well, it is kind of a dream, but it is also real.
Okay. I guess the main question is, if changelings are a thing... Does that mean werewolves and vampires are a thing?
I don't know how much of all of that is real and how much isn't. Okay. I know that there are things that are not us that are out there, and they like to kill. Some of them like to kill us.
Okay, got it. Yeah, okay.
But we're really good at hiding. So.
Okay.
Unless we're going through what you go through right now, which is why we're moving and not, you know, finding a single place to be.
This is the worst puberty I've ever experienced. Is this basically puberty? Very rapid changeling puberty?
Think of it more like a form of enlightenment.
I've read a decent amount of books about people going through an enlightenment. I don't think it's supposed to be this... changing?
Most of them aren't. Most of them are written by humans who kind of don't know what they're talking about.
Okay.
But there are also different kinds of enlightenment, you know? Ours is like somebody turned the lights on and the world suddenly makes sense. Or doesn't make sense until it does.
I suppose that's fair.
All of the crazy stuff that's happening around us, and he kind of gestures at a statue, a little statuary thing that is in somebody's yard, where in front of a building, it's like a little like angel holding a spear in one hand, and she's kind of like got the spear stretched up to the sky, and she's looking down. In the other direction, as her hand is reached down toward what looks like a human who is reaching out for her. She kind of looks up as you pass and gives a little wave.
I wave back.
Yeah, all that. Oh, that's a chimera. You'll learn more about those later.
Sorry, what? You know what? I'm just gonna shut up and just walk with you.
Okay. I mean, I have a car nearby. We do use cars. Some people use other things, chimerical horses and stuff like that. But car is fastest for what we need to do. I gotta get you to Richmond. And we're gonna introduce you to the Lord there, or the Duke, Duke Cormac. And he'll hopefully be able to help you find somebody who can take you in. Then do your fostering.
So the guy with the horse and the plate armor, that was legit. Okay.
Yeah, maybe.
Are there... Is it possible... Never mind. I just saw an angel statue wave at me. Never mind, that answers the question I had. Never mind. So shut up now.
You don't have to shut up. You can ask questions. I know great at this. I've never been there for somebody's chrysalis before, so this is kind of crazy.
It's more so... I think my voice box is still trying to adjust itself, and it kind of hurts a little.
Oh, I understand. All right, well, here's the car, and he hurries you over to a minivan. And it looks at first glance like just a normal old beat up kind of blue minivan that like any like family of five would have. When you get closer to it and you reach out to like grab the handle of the door, you realize that the door looks like it is covered in it looks like the door, rather than paint, has scales.
Just slow blinking this entire time. Just like, okay, just letting this, is this happening? I'm accepting this is happening.
Come on, we gotta go. And he like opens the door for you and like urges you inside and slams it closed, and then runs around to the front of it. And the inside of the van is like nothing you've ever seen. There are dials and knobs and levers and all sorts of things. It is like being in like what people who drove like Ford Model Ts might imagine like a hyper realistic car to look like, but you know, a hyper realistic car is unlikely to have quite this much accoutrement in it. But he like he hits like several buttons and flips some switches and pulls back on a lever and the van kind of rumbles to life around you, and it feels almost like a living thing. And as he pulls out into traffic, it gives a little like bang backfire thing, which makes your ears ring. Sorry. My friend's a knocker and he made it, and it's really cool. I don't need normal gas, but it can be a little loud if it decides it's going to backfire, and it always smells a little bit like, and he kind of takes a deep breath, like licorice in here. I've never figured that one out.
You had a friend make a car. Is that compliance with the laws of DC?
I mean, mortals see what they want to see, and he pulls out onto the street as he begins to pull through the streets of the city.
Fair enough.
Don't worry, we'll be fine. You'll be fine. We're gonna get you somewhere safe, and the Duke will know what to do. He'll get you somebody to do your fosterage, and you'll figure out what you're good at.
Great. I'm just gonna close my eyes and just vibe, I guess.
Okay. I'll keep the music off. I you keep wincing anytime anything loud happens, so. And I think that as the two of you drive through the city, turning towards Richmond, the whole world around you somehow more real and more intense than anything you could have imagined, and impossible at the same time, we are going to wrap it up there.